Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cows. This is Justice here at Blog Talk Radio. If you want to learn, listen, understand, and question, go to blogtalkradio.com/victim-of-racism. And for more information on racism, white supremacy, go to my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. My email address is justice.asap@yahoo.com. Replace white supremacy with justice. ASAP. You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious. Meanwhile, white people are very serious about playing hardball against us. And this hardball is called genocide.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade and Justice in for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy. This would be program number 2 for Saturday, January the 29th, 2011. If you didn't hear program number 1 with admitted racist white supremacist Dr. Martin Kevorkian, check out the broadcast. Very interesting information on films, especially the film Solo. Highly encourage victims of racism, white supremacy to check that film out. The same individual who did the film The Cube, Mr. Josh Wickett, he did a counter-racist film review of Cube at thecode.net. The same gentleman who directed that film directed Solo, 1996, Mario Van Peebles. Check it out. You have a black person on camera using logic to solve problems and to counter the violent attack of white people. Check it out, 1996 Solo. At any rate, and he's asking for definitions. He's asking white people for definitions to terms. Our guest on the program from Friday, January the 28th, had a fantastic program, was thoroughly enjoying the broadcast. We had close to 40 people called in during the broadcast. We had almost 30 people online at the time that the live stream stopped, and somehow I got disconnected. If the host gets disconnected once the two-hour live stream ends, the entire program ends instantaneously. So that's what happened. I'm not sure. I didn't lose my internet connection. I didn't even lose my Skype connection. I had several people on my Skype line, and I did not. The only connection I lost was my host line to Blog Talk Radio. So So I hope people sent emails. I sent emails to the people of All Talk Radio. They did get back to me. I would encourage anyone listening, if you have issues calling into a program, listening, accessing archives, email the white people at Blog Talk Radio. They have a link pretty much on every page on their site where you can request help. You can send an email. You can the BTR tech support. Let them know because the problem shouldn't be happening. So they should work on correcting it immediately. So if you have any issues, contact those folks immediately, and I will do the same. As the program ended in such an unrefined manner, I contacted our guest, and he was gracious to come back and share a bit more of his time with us and allow for some of the listeners, because a lot of folks did lose the opportunity to ask questions. So he came back showing his dedication to replacing white supremacy with justice immediately. Again, he is the architect of the counter-racism.com website. Tons of great information. They have the work study project where you can go, you can post, you can get information, you can ask for suggestions on racism, white supremacy. They also have the Counter Racism Radio Network, Counter Racism TV. They have counter racist film reviews, wealth of resources for non-white people, victims of racism, white supremacy. Our guest, he also is the author of How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy. In the spirit of compensation, there was an issue with downloading the book. People let me know they were not able to download the book. So I had already downloaded it. I uploaded it again to a different link and replaced that. So when the counter-racism link is working again, I'll put that one back. But in the meantime, I figured people who need the most help, victims of racism, white supremacy, I did not want them to miss out. So you can click that link and you're able to read the book in its entirety. And I think you can also download it as a PDF just to compensate until the previous link is up and running again. But our guest for the program, Mr. Williams, are you on the line with us, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm here. Thank you.
Outstanding. Our apologies for the abrupt ending to the broadcast yesterday. I suspect it could have been white supremacist shenanigans, but hopefully we will not have that issue today. And again, thank you for being so generous to come back and share a bit more of your time with us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me back.
For sure. I told folks I'm going to go to the phone lines earlier so that they have an opportunity to call in and ask questions. So if you're listening and you want to call in earlier this program with hands, feel free. I do have a couple questions. We have an opportunity to have you back on the program, and I'm sure Justice will as well. In fact, I'm going to start out with Justice. Justice, do you have some questions for Mr. Williams? I thought I already had your line open, and I do not. Your line is open now, so if you could start your questions from the top, that would be great. My apologies.
Okay. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hello. Hello, Mr. Williams. Thank you for coming back on the program. How did a race of people become a race of people?
That's an excellent question, and thank you for inviting me back. I don't have the answer to that question. Presumably, the people who came up with the concept of race are no longer living, or they no longer exist on the planet today. Presumably, that took place hundreds of years ago, as we examine closely our past. We see that hundreds of years ago, even thousands of years ago, people were being mistreated and mistreated on the basis of color. So according to what we do know, what we do have documented, presumably just someone just came up with the idea of, well, we are going to be a race of people. And presumably these were the white people who came up with the concept at the time. And in doing so, said that, well, everyone else is going to be a race of people. And we're going to tell them that they're a race of people. And we're going to tell them so much and so many times that they're going to believe it, that they're going to claim to be a race of people. And as we look at history or our past, we see that that has played out even until today. There are people who are black people who still claim to be a race of people without having any logical explanation of why they are a race of people, when in fact there's no such thing as a black race.
When did the practice of racism begin?
Another good question that I don't have the answer to. It was here when I got here. I was born in 1961. And so that makes me 50 years old. But it was here when I got here. And I talked to my parents and my parents' parents. They say the same thing. It was here when they got here. Even their parents, I am told, said the same thing, although they're no longer in the same form that I am on this planet. So I don't know the answer to that question. There are many people you'll find who will speculate as to when it started and who started it and how long it's been going on, and how it's changed, and things of that nature. But I can only speak in reference to my experience. And so that I know for sure. It was here when I got here.
What causes race to be a problem? Can you answer that question? If not, that's
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure. And I hope I've answered the first two previous questions to the best of my ability. I mean,
Yes, you have.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. What causes race to be a problem is that people are mistreated because of it. And the premise from which I function is that no person should be mistreated for any reason, especially a reason that is out of their control. For someone to say that they are white and that I am not, and because I am not, then I qualify to be mistreated because I am not. It makes no logical sense whatsoever. And so when we look at the term race, It's very difficult to come up with anything that is constructive as a result of it. I mean, I haven't been able to find anything at all in my 50 years on this planet whereby we take the concept of race and the practice of race and be able to show without a shadow of a doubt that the result of it is that no person is mistreated. I can't find that anywhere in my 50 years here on this planet.
Why do you think racism is practiced by those, meaning white people, who practice racism or white supremacy?
I'm not sure why they do it, except the evidence shows that they're doing it because they want to do it. You'll hear lots of speculation about why it is that the white people who practice racism and white supremacy do so. But if you really look at the evidence as to why they do it, it's difficult to come up with any logical answer as to why. I mean, there are some people who will say that the white people who practice racism and white supremacy do so because if they didn't, the non-white people of the world would eliminate them from the planet. But if you study history, there is no account of non-white people being aggressive towards white people in such a way that a white person would have to, or white people would have to, come together as a team and say, hey, look, we are defending ourselves by mistreating everybody on the basis of color. I mean, that just doesn't exist at all anywhere in history. And it doesn't matter whose history you study, whether it's black history or white history, or, I mean, whatever the case may be. Black people have never been just clamoring to get after white people for any reason, especially anything sexually related. Black people just have, there's just no account in history where that has taken place. But you'll find that there are many people who will say that it's a defensive posture by white people to keep from being eliminated off the face of the earth. But I urge you to, if you hear that, you know, take a look at the evidence and decide for yourself. Don't take my word for it, and don't take the person's word for it who tells you that. Just take your time and examine the evidence and think about it logically. And I'm sure you'll come to a conclusion that'll satisfy you.
How does racism, white supremacy, function without fail?
How does it function without fail?
Yes.
I'm not sure that it does. I mean, it's a business. I mean, every business has successes and failures. What the white people who practice racism and white supremacy try to do, and they do a really good job of doing this, is to make sure that they have more successes than failures. You know, so as long as they're able to do that, they're able to keep their business running. Just like any other business, if you're in, like, say, the grocery business, for example, and you order 100 ears of corn, isn't that funny, Justice, that they would refer to corn as ears? I thought that was pretty funny when I was growing up. But if you're in the grocery business and you order 100 ears of corn, well, you want to make sure that most of the corn that you receive is fit for sale. Although you're going to have some corn that's just no good at all. I mean, once you get it, you'll have to throw it away. But the idea is to have more good corn than bad corn. And so you order your corn according to that. And you sell what you're able to sell to make a profit. racism, white supremacy is a business as well. And so the way that it operates is that it makes sure, the white people who run it make sure, that the majority of the non-white people are confused about how it works. They know that there's going to be some non-white people, you know, like myself and others, who are going to be revealing the truth about what it is that they're doing. But they're not really concerned about that at this point, unless that number grows so much so that the majority of non-white people understand what they're doing. That's one thing that they don't want to happen at all. So they make sure that the majority of non-white people on this planet are confused about what it is that they're doing. And as long as that is true, then the business just operates just the way that they want it to operate.
Oh, wait a minute. Your line got muted. Sorry about that, Justice. If you want to start your question one more time, my apologies.
How long do you think racism is going to stay here?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know, and I don't like to speculate. I'm doing the best that I can with the resources that I have, and hopefully other non-white people who are able to work against the system are doing the best that they can according to the resources that they have. You know, of course, that there are going to be non-white people who are better equipped than I am, who have a plethora of resources that they can tap into. I've never had, many, many resources that I could tap into. I've just been able to do what I can while I can. And so hopefully before I pass on, it'll be gone. That is what I'm working toward. I dare say it, tarry longer than that. I mean, it was here when I got here, so it's been here 50 years and it's still here. And so hopefully we can wake up tomorrow morning and it'll be gone. You know, and you'll know it's gone. The air will smell different. I mean, everything will be different.
I agree.
So hopefully when we wake up in the morning, it'll be gone. But if it's not, that means it's right back to the drawing board, doing what it is that we can do in order to get rid of it.
I don't have any more questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions.
Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest, Mr. Edwards, and those listening in, we are fundraising for the duration of the month of January. Please invest if you think the program is giving out some constructive information that you can use. The links are right in the description for every program where you can invest. You can also help posting links to the show. Super helpful. Gets the word out. If you think the information is constructive. I had a couple other questions about the book, but I did want to ask with regards to your counter-racism website, exactly what was your thought process in putting the website together? What were you trying to accomplish, and how did you know you were making progress towards that end?
Initially, that's a really good question. Initially, there were a handful of us who were communicating via the code.net website. This was back in, I think it was 2001. And we were actually called on by John Belisle, who's the owner of the code.net website, to make contributions to the website, either by movie reviews, book reviews, things of that nature. And so then John contacted me one day and said, oh, what do you think about a message board? And I said, well, I think that would be a good idea. At that particular time, I was posting on a lot of other people's message boards that are no longer in existence today. And so he put one together using the resources that he had at the time. And so we began to, lots of people began to talk to each other, non-white people, about producing justice and using counter-racist language. And it wasn't long before the white people showed up. So they have to, have to do their bit, see if they can confuse understanding for the non-white people there. I think at the time, John was doing a lot of traveling around the world. It was very difficult for us to contact him with all of his traveling. And because he had contacted us to provide content for his website, the things that we had to provide to his website, they were backing up. I mean, we just had multiple things. And I hadn't even considered at that particular time putting a website together, even though I was, at that time, I was a webmaster at NASA. It's interesting how closely NASA sounds to MASA, doesn't it? I thought that was interesting. Everybody working for MASA. So anyway, we were, you know how non-white people do. We began to talk amongst ourselves. And most oftentimes it's not constructive because we're talking about other people. And the there were some comments made about John at the time that I didn't really care for. And I said, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll just go ahead and start another website. And I sent to John, I sent John an email and let him know that I was going to start another website. He said he thought that was a pretty good idea. And so I thought about all the things that would be required to put it together and, you know, what exactly that I'd use it for. And so when I first put it together, it only had three or four sections. It only had the article section and the it had the work study project, but it wasn't called that at the time. It was just called the discussion board. And it had I think one or two other sections. And so the people who were involved in providing content for John's website wanted to also provide, you know, content for the website that I built. Although there seemed to be some contention for some reason. And so I told everybody, hey, look, just, whatever you can provide is fine, you know. If you can't provide anything at all, you know, that's fine too. I don't have a problem with that. And I discussed it with John. John said, hey, I don't have a problem with it either. So just trying to make sure that the communication, you know, between the non-white people involved remained on as constructive a level as possible. And a lot of times that is difficult to do. And so we progressed from that point. That's why if you'll look at the counterracism.com website, it has a lot of material by me. And that was only because, see, initially it wasn't that way. But the people who were clamoring to get their content published on a website began to drop off and fade off. And so I had concluded before then, even before the website was public, that that this was something that I was supposed to be doing, some activity that I was supposed to be involved in. And I had to ask myself, well, and this is a question I think that many non-white people have to ask themselves or should ask themselves, because many of us really don't want to get involved in doing something, especially when you start talking about producing justice or working against the system of racism and white supremacy. We really don't want to get involved in that unless there's a lot of other non-white people with us. We have what I've heard termed as a herd mentality. The question that I had to ask myself is that, well, do I really want to be involved in the practice of counter-racism in an effort to produce justice all by myself? Or do I want to wait on other non-white people to get involved so that we can do it together? Well, it took me about 2 seconds to answer that question. And the answer to the question was, all I have is myself. And so I better get to it. And so you'll see multiple articles by myself. The ones from other people are a little dated. I'm not certain at this point when I stopped receiving input from them. But, I mean, that's their choice. I didn't ask anyone if in fact that is what they wanted to do. My position was and is and has always been that if you have something to contribute, no problem. In fact, I think that you've even contributed an article. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Yeah. And so when you came to me with it, I put it up as quickly as I possibly could. Hopefully it was quick enough for you.
It was. I remember writing that article about the film Mandalay.
Right.
Like, that was before the radio program existed the first time around in 2007. Way early stages of my understanding of racism, white supremacy. Yeah, wow. Yeah, I remember that. I remember. And Mr. Williams, he said the lesson that I believe you said your father gave to you was be proud of your work, proud of things that you are doing, not just proud for the sake of being proud. Am I botching the phrase, or is that at least in the ballpark?
That's pretty close. That's pretty close. But I mean, and that'll do. I mean, it's a matter of standing by your work, really. I mean, it's don't be proud of something just because you're proud of it. You know, I mean, you can have pride in something, but make sure it's pride in something that you've done and done correctly. So that's the basic message.
Well, I guess I have one other about the radio program, since that obviously had an impact. What were you trying to accomplish with the counter-racist radio network?
Well, that's part of the website, and the goal objective for the website was to globalize the concept of counter-racism. And I knew that I could get other people involved in doing so. So I think one of the first major upgrade was to reorganize the discussion board into the work-study project. I mean, it's really crazy. The amount of things that and the amount of times that the white people who practice racism and white supremacy will post to a discussion board. I mean, they have no... I think the best way of saying it is everything that a racist white supremacist does supports racism white supremacy. I mean, that is true even in that regard. And so while there are non-white people who believe that if non-white people just start asking questions that somehow they'll, you know, magically pick up counter-racism logic, that ain't true. And there have been multiple discussion boards to show it ain't true. You know, and so early on, back when the website was first put up in 2003, that's what people were pushing. That's what people were pushing. And it just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. So I had to modify the discussion board into the work-study project and make it scientific so that each person could perform their own work and they could post that work and post the data according to the counter-racism science experiment that they were running, and other people can see that and read that and try to get an understanding of the logic that that person was using. So that was the first major update. The second major update, of course, was the counter-racism radio network. And I saw a need, you know, out of necessity again, to have that done. I had just so many recordings that I've gotten from other non-white people of Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, Asa Hilliard, Malana Karanga. I mean, just, I have a hard drive full of recordings. And so I got an account with Live365, and I tell you, they're expensive. That is a $50 a month tag. And for it to have been running, you know, 8 years straight, you know, without hiccup, and that money came out of my pocket. I didn't take any donations. Well, very few. I have a list of donations, people on the donations page, but it's been less than 10. And so I have foot the bill for that all these years, which is not a problem for me. I mean, you are doing the correct thing in fundraising. I mean, that's the correct thing to do, no doubt about it. The way I saw it at the time was that I was attempting to spend most of my time and energy working against the system. And so the money that I was making from the job goes into that pot as well. So spending that for the radio program, for the website, for driving traffic to the website, things of that nature, was not a problem. Making pretty good money anyway, so I wanted to spend as much as I could working against the system. Now, how it works out in my mind is basically that I use my time and energy on the job and to the people that I work for on the job, my time and energy is worth X amount of dollars. And so if I could spend more than half of that working against the system, then the time and energy I'm using on the job is actually time and energy I'm using to work against the system. That's the way I saw it at the time. Although I was never able to spend more than 50% of my time and energy working against the system. I mean, that's just the way the system is structured, I think. Although I hope I'm incorrect about that. Please let me know when you think that you are spending more than 50% of your time and energy working against the system. I mean, even as we think, I mean, our thoughts, you know, most of them are not geared toward working against the system because of all of the peripheral things that the racist white supremacists put in place. And so I began to watch the recordings. Live 365 has some pretty good statistical information about how long this person stays listening to this broadcast versus that broadcast. And it wasn't long before I began to scale down the content to only people who were listening to replacing the system of racism, white supremacy with a system of justice. I mean, there just weren't a whole lot of people who were listening to some of the other programs that I had, like Ivan Van Sertima talking about his books, George G.M. James, you know, and people of that nature, George Massey. There just wasn't on my radio station a great deal of listeners for that type of material. And I imagine that's because there are many other radio stations where they can hear that. And so people were spending the most time listening to Mr. Fuller and Dr. Welsing and things related to counter-racism code. And so I began to hone in on that. And only play that material, and the number of listeners boomed after that. And I would get emails from people talking about how much they enjoyed the programming and so on and so forth. And so I stuck with that programming. During that same period, I was posting videos on YouTube and on Google. I think I have more videos on Google than I have on YouTube. And I still have a whole lot more videos that haven't been posted. I mean, we've run some counter-racism science experiments that have been videoed where there have been people who are part of the video crew who were caught in some of the videos, and they have expressed that they do not want that video shown. So I have lots of videos that are still on my hard drive of counter-racism science experiments that people will probably never see, unfortunately, unless these people change their minds. So I took those videos and started the counter-racism television network and posted them there and also on YouTube and on Google as best I could. And so during the time of the counter-racism radio, counter-racism television network, I was also running annual projects. You can find that on the projects page under counter-racism.com, counter-racism.com. I was giving away money, and for counter-racism science experiments, and other people were participating in judging those experiments that people submitted. It was only myself and Josh Wickett who were putting together the funding for that. So the way I saw it, of course, is just more money to go into the pool of money that I'm using against the system. So that was not a problem to put that together. And so the website kind of progressed from there. What you see out there now, if it's even available, I mean, it was down Thursday and up Friday, and I think it's down today. So hopefully they'll get it up and running as quickly as possible. That generally just doesn't happen with the hosting company that I'm using. I mean, the website has not been down, I'd say 10 times in the last 8 years. It's been hacked a few times, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost routine there for a little while, around 2005, 2006. Oh yeah. They hacked the work study project, and they put a whole lot of white power stuff on the page.
Wow.
Oh yeah. So I mean, that hasn't happened, like say in the last 3 or 4 years, but oh yeah, they are. I mean, I explained to Justice, you know, yesterday, that's a machine that runs 24/7. I mean, they burn at midnight all trying to figure out how to come up with more confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's generally how it plays out. I mean, to have a blog is probably the way to go these days. I understand that you have one. I've read yours. I've read Justice's, and I've read other people's as well. So that's generally the way to go. I mean, you're limited in the number of applications that can be run, you know, like a discussion board and things like that. But that's really the way to go. I mean, if you want to minimize the risk of getting hacked. As I understand it, Mark Zuckerberg got hacked recently. So what does that tell you? CEO of his Facebook page got hacked.
Wow. System of injustice. You should expect all sorts of incorrect things to happen. So, you know, that's just routine, the system of injustice. I wanted to make sure I threw in. That was another thing that I personally appreciated a lot about the Counter Racism Radio Network. White people, you know, they are on their job. They do not take holidays. They do not take days off. Counter Racism Radio is on 24/7. And, I used to listen because it was always there. And I appreciated that resource, particularly in the beginning, because I think sometimes coming out of that confusion, it's good to get things repeated. Sometimes you need to hear information, or at least for me, it was good that I could hear things, you know, repeated. I needed that to kind of just think about it and let it sink in a little bit. And that was something I really appreciated about the Counter Racism Radio Network. I also wanted to ask, before I check some of the folks that called in, questions. That was one of the first things that really stood out to me when I began to study racism, white supremacy as science, asking questions, the importance of asking questions, and not just asking, you know, a question just for the sake of being able to say, okay, I asked a question, but I mean really being methodical and strategic about your questions to the point where you already know I'm going to ask this question, and regardless of what the answer is, I know what I'm going to say next, which will be another question. And then, I mean, you already got planned out what you're going to say. Right. Can you talk about the importance of moving away from just making statements to making laser-focused questions?
Oh, sure, certainly. As a matter of fact, I have a counter-racism science experiment that I wrote for myself. I mean, many of the ones that I have in my lab book were ones that I wrote for me so that I could change my behavior I have one that's called No Assumptions, and so in which case I would spend a certain period of time. It started out with 10 minutes initially, where I would not make any assumptions. And I tell you, that's extremely difficult to do. Extremely difficult to do. And I almost fell asleep the first time I did it, you know, trying to blank my mind. Because you're always looking and observing. Your mind is always running. I mean, the mind never sleeps. Even when you are asleep, it's not asleep. And so I thought that the conclusion that I had drawn when I thought my way through the experiment before I'd even run it was that I would end up asking more questions by not making assumptions. And so I ran the experiment a couple of times, and sure enough, I asked more questions. But one of the things that I saw that was a part of the data was that not only did I ask more questions, I made fewer statements. Now, I had no idea that that was going to happen, that while attempting not to make any assumptions, that I would make fewer statements. And that's how it turned out. There was a time where I was just asking questions just to be asking them. And I had some questions that were lined up, you know. And I wasn't the only person that was doing this. I mean, there were other non-white people that were doing the same questions. And so it wasn't long, you know, because we were all basically on the same mediums, message boards, things like Pal Talk and whatnot. It wasn't long before people began to say, okay, you started asking them the questions, and they say, okay, I'll give you all five answers right now. You know? That's the way it went. I mean, they already knew what the next question was going to be. You know, so it wasn't long before they could figure out exactly where the conversation was going, even before it got there. And I mentioned last night that I began asking a guy a question like that by asking him, are you a white person? And he sat back and looked at me and asked me, you know, what is it that you're really trying to find out? Because I had my questions lined up. He didn't fall for that. I mean, the whole point of that is, at that particular time, what I was really trying to find out was if the person was a racist white supremacist. But the whole point of the example is that, you know, asking questions just to be asking them, that's not going to do it. Because it won't be long before people catch on to that. But the focus should be, what are you asking the question for? What is it that you're trying to get out of it? What is it that you're trying to produce? You're asking a question, and here's another experiment that I have on the work-study project. In order to do what? And this was a question that I began to ask myself. I'm doing this in order to do what? And in order to do what after that? And in order to do what after that? I mean, where is all this supposed to be going? What's the ultimate goal objective? And so then I began to run that experiment every day, each day, asking myself, well, you know, why am I doing this? In order to do what? And it was only then that I began to understand how some of the things that I was doing wasn't amounting to very much at all. So I began to change my behavior so that much of it, not all of it, unfortunately, but much of it began to be focused toward the path of producing justice.
My last question before I go to the phone lines and I'm going to double check with Justice as well. You talked briefly on the program yesterday. You shared that you have offspring and talking to your offspring about racism, white supremacy. Given what you know now, how would you go about the process of informing your offspring if you were just having children for the first time? How would you go about that process of informing them about the system of white supremacy?
Well, if I was just starting out?
Yes, sir.
Well, one of the things I would be doing is I'd be reading a code book to the baby while my wife is asleep. While she's laying there asleep, I'd be laying on her stomach reading the code book.
Wow.
I mean, that's where I would start. That's where I would start, and having conversations. I remember my daughter's mother was pregnant. And I used to play with my daughter when she was still in her mother. She would put her hand against the wall, inside wall of her mother's belly. And I would rub her hand and she would move it and put it somewhere else. And, you know, that is an amazing process. You know, childbirth, that's amazing. I was there when she was born. And so the point of that is that, you know, children, they understand things. They learn things even while they're still in the womb. And so I would definitely be, I have my books and my audio, and I'm sitting right there pumping it right into the womb, you know, as best I could. And begin to explain things to the child, you know, as soon as they come out, as soon as they're birthed. Preparing them to understand how the world works among people. And apologizing to them, of course, for my lack of being able to change things before they got here. And telling them that, hey, it's all up to you now. Sorry about that. No, I give it to them straight. I always have.
And at what age would you begin giving it to them straight?
Zero.
Zero. Wow. Wow.
Zero. Okay. Oh, yeah. While they're still in the womb, zero.
Wow. Wow. You wouldn't have concerns that, you know, you're going to produce, you know, some radical militant, you know, hating all white people? You don't think you would produce that if you took that approach?
Oh, no, because I don't see it that way. I don't see it that way, so I wouldn't be able to teach that way. Counter-racism is not about hating white people. I mean, it's about producing justice. That's all it's about. It ain't about nothing else. I mean, you'd hear some people talk about it, and you swear it's about killing all the white people, you know, and If a non-white person says that, then they're qualified to say that because they are qualified to make their own assessment about how the system works and what it is they have to do to respond to it. They're qualified to say that. But I don't walk around saying that. And so there's no way that I would teach that to a child of mine. You know, it wouldn't be long, you know, before they did kill somebody if I did that. I mean, I didn't teach anything to the children that I have right now. I didn't teach it to them like, you know, I was the drop squad or anything like that. You ever seen that movie?
Is that the one where the black males, they go get the black people that they think are quote unquote selling out? Is that the one?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't have those kind of techniques.
Okay.
So, like I explained to Justice last night, you know, I gave an example of some of the things that I used to do, conversations I used to have with my daughter about producing justice and understanding what it is that she sees when she's looking at it and why it's that way and what to do about it. Always gave her options. And we discussed options, my sons as well. I only talked about one of my sons last night because my other son passed away in 96. So I generally don't talk a whole lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
But, taught them the same way as I taught my daughter. You know, from what I saw, you know, there's no regard to gender in reference to counter-racism. You know, because the focus should be to say things in such a way that no person can say them better. And to do things in such a way that no one can do it better. That's the focus. So it doesn't matter if you are male or female, and it doesn't matter if you're talking to a male or female. You know, you just keep that focus, is what I told them. So grounded in that, the concept of the production of justice, you know, they, as individual people, have to decide what is better and what is best. Daddy can't decide that for you. I decide for me, you decide for you. As one thing that I definitely didn't believe in was unloading all of my inadequacies on my children. Yeah, I was definitely against that. But I would teach them to understand what they're looking at, show them how to be able to determine that, and help to guide them in the direction of doing the correct thing.
Context of white supremacy. Justice, do you have any more questions for Mr. Williams?
How can words become more important than what one sees?
That's a good question. And that is if the person doesn't understand what they're looking at. If they don't understand what they're looking at, then the word that's in their mind, which has a definition that they didn't come up with, is more important. This is the reason it's critically important to change the definition of words so that even when you think about the word itself, it helps you to understand what you're looking at. That means the definition of the word has to be the truth about what you're looking at. Otherwise, you'll end up fooling yourself. I mean, what's going to happen is, well, there's something that's called a tree. And when you look at it, and you've been taught, have you been taught what a tree is? Justice?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. So why is that a tree?
because it has leaves, pine cones, things that, apples, different things on it.
Okay, good description. Now, when you look up the word tree in a dictionary and see the definition of the word tree, it may not say that.
True.
See, so when you take a definition of a word and you accept that definition as the truth simply because somebody said it is the truth, but when you use that word to think with or use that word to speak with, it doesn't allow you to understand what's really happening, then you are confused. Now, the person that's doing it, thinking with the word and its definition and using the word with its definition, they don't know that they are confused. I mean, if somebody else come along and use the word differently, they'll say that person is confused. But the whole idea is for you to understand what it is that you're looking at and to make sure that what you're looking at is true. That's the goal objective. You want to make sure that it's true, that you don't end up fooling yourself, that you don't end up, and if you remember the explanation I gave last evening, so that you don't end up thinking that integration is the solution to the race problem. See how that works? Because it's not. Slaves on the slave plantation were integrated with the slave master. Some of them slept in the same house. How much more integrated can you be? But the slave was still a slave, and that is an unjust relationship. That's an unjust relationship. So the objective is to seek justice, not integration. Did I help to explain a little bit, or did I confuse you more?
You explained in the best way.
Okay, thank you. You have any more questions for me?
Yes.
Okay.
In your book, you say, "What is already in place in the system of racism, white supremacy, which is designed to keep non-white people confused." Essentially, many non-white people have become comfortable with being confused. How did you conclude that non-white people feel comfortable of being confused?
I used to be comfortable with being confused. That's where it starts. Self-examination, self-improvement is where it starts.
You know why?
I'm sorry?
Do you know why you were that way?
Do I know? Oh, sure, because people generally accept what's already in place. I mean, if you raised up eating rats, you know, and you've eaten rats all your life, and rats is a delicacy. You know, and when people come to you and say, "Hey, look, you should be eating that. That's filthy. You know, you should be eating broccoli and asparagus." And the person who was raised, say again.
I said, I agree.
Yeah. So somebody comes along and says that, but you were raised up eating rats, and you say, "Hey, look, get away from me with that. I've been eating this all my life. My parents ate rats. My grandparents ate rats. What are you talking about? You are crazy talking about that." See, so, I mean, when you are born into that, you think that's the whole world, that there's nothing outside of that. It's like a person being born in prison. And they think that prison is the whole world. There's nothing else except that. And so it becomes difficult for them to be even able to think about something outside of that, because that's all they have is prison life. And they develop an affection for that. They begin to like it, even though it's unjust. They begin to like it. You know, so the same thing happened with me. I was born into a system of racism, white supremacy. I knew that, you know, there were some things that were just not right, but that was based on what I was taught was not right. Not because I had any revelation about it not being right. But as I began to look at things and examine myself, I mean, self-improvement is where it's at. As I began to do that, I began to understand that I was comfortable with some interactions between people that was unjust. Those interactions were incorrect. Not because of what I had been taught was incorrect, but because things could be done in a better way.
What is counter-racism jiu-jitsu, and what does it do that helps to replace white supremacy with justice?
Oh, counter-racism jiu-jitsu. That'll be a lengthy answer. I'll see if I can sum it up really quick. It's a method, basically, a method that can be used to use the weight of the system of racism, white supremacy against itself. It's not a method that can be used by non-white people to show white people that non-white people are more powerful than white people. It's not like that. Or that you can beat somebody up. It's not like that. Jiu-jitsu is basically a martial art, is what it's called, where you use the weight of your opponent against them, in a sense. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't try to overpower them with your strength. You allow them to use their strength, and you use your understanding about how things work. And because of that, you are able to use your opponent's weight against them. Now, when I say use your understanding of how things work, I mean, you really have to have a firm grasp of how things work conceptually and in reality. Everything is a concept until it becomes reality. And so what you want to make sure is, I mean, you're not necessarily trying to cut your opponent off at the knees using counter-racism jiu-jitsu. And it can't be used so that you end up fooling yourself into thinking that you are responding from a position of power, and you are not in a position of power. If you're a non-white person on this planet. So what it allows you to do is to turn the deception that's used by the smartest, most powerful white people, turn the deception on itself. That's how it works in a basic sense.
How does counter-racism science help non-white people understand racism, white supremacy?
We spoke a few minutes ago about being born in a prison and how that person doesn't really understand what's going on around them other than prison life. Non-white people are born into a system of racism, white supremacy. They're born into that. I mean, that is the only race war that's taken place, and it was taking place before I got here. We were born into a war on a losing side. So that because the people who are in power use deceit against their victims, it's difficult for non-white people to understand how things work. I mean, we can figure out some general things, you know, how to reproduce and, you know, how to make a little money, maybe even how to build some things. But when it comes to people interactions and how they're controlled on a global scale, on a universal scale, it's difficult for non-white people to think that way because they've been subjects of deception all along. So what the book points out is two different ways of the use of counter-racism science to help non-white people to understand how things work, to help them to think differently in terms of understanding how things work, to help them to speak differently in terms of how things work, and to help them to act differently. And the two examples in the book that are given is trial and error and the use of the scientific method. And in the book, I lay out my shortcomings using both methods, both parts to the same method, because either one, trial and error, I mean, that's still counter-racism science. And the use of the scientific method is also counter-racism science. There's really no way to separate the two completely. I mean, everything in the universe is connected. Everything. And so are those two things.
Can you remember any videos on YouTube you have seen that are constructive for helping non-white people replace white supremacy with justice?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are quite a few videos that people have on YouTube by lots of different people. Asafo87 has some, he goes by the name Codified Soldier. He has some videos. I have some videos. Other people have videos. SinQ has some videos. There are quite a few non-white males and non-white females that have videos on YouTube talking about the race problem and talking about it in a constructive manner. Now, of course, there are some that are there that are humorous or I'm not sure if they were meant to, but it appears as though to me that they are making fun of the race problem. You know, I usually just skip right past those. But, yeah, there are lots of videos on YouTube that talk about the race problem. There were some there a few years ago that are no longer there that I thought were constructive. Not sure what happened to them, but they're no longer there. So I'm not not certain how long even mine will be out there, which is one of the reasons why I didn't link from the Counter-Racism Television Network to a lot of videos on YouTube, because they'll come up missing. Videos on YouTube will come up missing without warning. I've done response videos to some people on YouTube, and the video that I did a response video to is no longer there. So if you find a video on YouTube that you think is constructive toward the production of justice, if you're able to download it, make sure you get a good download of it, because there's no telling how long it's going to be there.
In your video, response video, White People Invented Racism, in your video, response video, White People Invented Racism, you say, what am I going to do about racism, white supremacy? What are some of the best things non-white people can do to work against racism, white supremacy?
One of the best things that they can do is to change their own behavior. The system of racism, white supremacy works by the white people who practice it and the non-white people who go along with it. I mean, that's it at a basic level. I call it a tragic arrangement. But, I mean, there is no gap between going along with it and working against it. There's nothing in between that. I mean, you're either going along with it or you're working against it. And there's no splitting the difference. And so while I recognize that part of my existence, I mean, even today, is spent going along with the system. This is the reason why I talked earlier about trying to spend more than half of my time and energy working against it. So much so that if it's possible to spend all of my time and energy working against it, there are some things that, I mean, you know, I watched a basketball game early on ESPN. So I don't imagine while doing that, I was working against the system of racism and white supremacy. You know, and my attention span has become so short in doing things like that. I didn't watch it for 5 minutes, but even for 5 minutes, I could have been writing a counter-racism science experiment in those 5 minutes. And so each individual non-white person has to decide for themselves at a time and place of their own choosing how much of their time and energy they are going to spend working against the system versus going along with it. I mean, a prisoner is a prisoner in a prison is going along with the prison system just by being in the prison. Just by being there, even when they're trying to get out, because they are in the prison, they are part of the system itself. So the objective is to tear the whole prison down.
I don't have any more questions at the top of my head, but if I do, Gus will come to me. Thank you.
Sounds good to me. I enjoy talking to you.
Groovy, I'm going to go to the phone lines. I'm going to play Justice made a commercial today, so and she didn't get to hear it, so I'm going to play her commercial again, and I'll play the counter-racism radio network commercial as well. If you have a question for Mr. Williams, the number is 347-215-6071. Just press 1 if you have a question. I will go to the phone lines. I'll make sure if you call in, you will definitely get on to ask your question. If you could keep the background noise down, that would be very, very helpful. Had a little background noise earlier today. If you know you are in a noise environment, use your mute button. And, you know, when I come to your line, if you could be in a quiet place, that would be extra helpful just to maintain the quality of the broadcast. But I will be right back. We will be right back after this quick commercial break.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? At counterracism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cows. This is Justice here at Block Talk Radio. If you want to learn, listen, understand, and question, go to blogtalkradio.com/victim-of-racism. And for more information on racism and white supremacy, go to my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. My email address is justice.asap@yahoo.com. Replace white supremacy with justice. ASAP.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Context of white supremacy. The person who called in from a blocked number, if you have a question for Mr. Williams, your line should be open. Please go right ahead, sir. Or, excuse me, caller from a blocked number. Are you there?
Yes. Greetings and good evening to everyone. I would like to firstly ask the guest, how can uninformed, homeless, non-white people learn about the system of racism, white supremacy, and how can they use knowledge of the system to improve their lives and challenge the system? Secondly, how can non-white people practically become more self-sufficient and less dependent on white people, even if they barely have any money? Thirdly,
Can we do the questions one at a time? Because I know it gets hard for me to remember the questions. Just if you can call them out one at a time, like read one, let the person answer, and do it that way. So we got two on the table, Mr. Williams. You want to start with those two?
Sure. The answer to the first question, and thank you for your questions, caller. The answer to the first question is simply for people to help them solve problems. I mean, this is the best way to go about doing it. If you are aware that there are some homeless. That's an interesting word in and of itself, homeless. Non-white people, and you are able to help them to solve a problem in the process of helping them to solve the problem, whatever problem it is that they may have. You can provide them with some information about the system and how it works. This is the best way to go about doing it that I found thus far. The system of racism and white supremacy produces problems for non-white people. And not just non-white people who are homeless. Non-white people in all facets, in all areas of people activity. So the goal objective is to produce justice in a manner that those problems are eliminated. The cliche term is to solve problems without producing more problems. And so if you know of some non-white people who you are able to help, whether they are homeless or not, regardless as to the problem they may have, and I point that out in the book, actually, I give examples of that. If you have knowledge, one of the examples is that if you have knowledge of how to repair automobiles and you know someone whose automobile is down and they need that automobile to go back and forth to work and things of that nature, grocery store and what have you, and then you offer your assistance to that person to solve that problem, to help them to fix their automobile. Now, while in the process of doing that, helping that person to fix their automobile, repair their automobile, you can talk about just about anything that is of constructive value in terms of how the system works or how to produce justice. But once the conversation degrades into gossiping, nitpicking, name-calling, and things of that nature, and it's time to leave because those things are not constructive and they don't have a constructive outcome. So that's generally how it's done. Solve problems without producing more problems. The second question in terms of becoming self-sufficient, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. I mean, Saddam Hussein was self-sufficient, some people might say. So it just depends on what it is that you are trying to accomplish and accomplish in order to do what. I mean, non-white people have a wealth of information. At their fingertips on a daily basis. It depends on what the individual person is trying to accomplish. And that person will have to, whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish, will have to make sense to them as individual people, first of all. I mean, if it doesn't make sense to them, I mean, why do it? And then it has to make sense, of course, in terms of their communication or interaction with other people. And what does it mean? That's up to the individual person to decide. So I'm not quite sure about what you mean by self-sufficient. Not depend on white people. If that's where you draw the line, I'm not sure how you can go about doing that. I mean, that's what white supremacy means. They're in a supreme position. Not supreme, meaning that they are better than non-white people. I mean, that's not what, when I use the word supreme in reference to the smartest, most powerful white people, I am certainly not talking about they are better than anybody. It's positional. I mean, in every war, there's a person who is winning that war, a person or people who are winning that war, and there is a person or people who are losing that war. And the people who are winning the war are in a supreme position. Now, when it comes to the race war, white people are winning that war. Now, should they be winning? No. But the concept of race shouldn't exist at all. Nobody should be running a race war. You should get rid of the practice and the concept of race altogether. Race is racism. So that's the position I take. You have another question, caller?
I want to make sure I get a question or two from some of the other people that called in, and then I'm going to try and double back and pick up some of his extra questions. I believe one of our favorite guests and supporters, investors, Pam, she is the co-author of Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation. Pam, are you on the line? Oops, I thought I opened your line up and I did not. I hit the wrong line. Sorry about that. All right, Pam, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hello, Gus, Justice, and Mr. Williams. How are
you? Hey, Pam, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I missed a lot of what happened yesterday, and I caught the tail end, and then it got cut off, and I just thought it was because I hadn't called in. I didn't know that that the white supremacists were playing again. So,
They're at their job.
Yeah. So I'm so glad you came back tonight. I did have a couple of questions for you real quick. The thing that confuses me, I'm not real up on the code. I read it, and I have to admit, you know, a lot of things are not clear to me. And I think it was one about calling a white person a racist. If that's incorrect, is that correct? For a non-white person to call a white person a racist?
Well, I wouldn't say it's incorrect. I mean, mm-hmm. Each non-white person has to decide for themselves whether or not that's correct.
Okay.
You know, it's not a religion.
Okay.
It's not a religion. And the code book is the Bible, you know. It's nothing like that.
It's hard. I almost view it that way. Like, you can't change that religion. You can't change that Bible. You know what I mean? It's just, you know.
No, it's not a cult follower or anything like that, anything at all.
Okay.
In fact, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. is a non-white person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that in and of itself tells you right there, he doesn't know everything there is to know about racism, white supremacy, and how it works. He doesn't know that. He'll admit that himself. So, mm-hmm. Individual non-white people have to decide that for themselves. That's why it's called United Independent.
Okay.
Yeah, United Independent. So, one of the suggestions in the code book, of course, is to use the word suspect racist.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount of logic attached to that.
Okay.
Yeah, but, I mean, there are variations of the terms that people use.
Mm-hmm.
Suspect racist, racist suspect, admitted racist. There are lots of non-white people who just call white people racist, white supremacists, and when they do, I don't say nothing. You know, they're qualified to make that determination.
Okay.
And they owe it to themselves to make that determination.
Okay.
You know, I mean, once you get that focus of saying the things that need to be said so that no person can say it better, and doing the things that need to be done in such a way that nobody can do it better, once you have that kind of focus, I mean, you're going to settle on whatever it is that you settle on.
Okay. You know, you said something just a little while ago about race is racism, and that basically, I maybe misunderstood it, but referring to ourselves as a race is somewhat like the same as racism.
Right. I think I understand the question. If I understand the question, there are many non-white people who say that black people can't be racist.
Okay.
But they don't have the language to explain why that is.
Hmm.
I mean, we understand that. We have a certain understanding in terms of how the universe works among people.
Mm-hmm.
That we can't be racist, but we don't understand how that is. If you're a member of a race, you're a racist. It's really simple. If you're a member of a race, you are a racist.
Hmm.
You can't get any more simple than that.
You're going to have to get simpler for me.
I'm sorry?
I'm not following it, honestly.
Okay, well, let me keep going.
Okay.
Let me keep going. So the practice of racism is to mistreat people on the basis of color.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason racism is white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
The people who mistreat people on the basis of color are racist, conceptually,
mm-hmm.
and in practice. But if a black person is the member of a race, that black person is a racist. Now, white people will say to black people that you are the member of a race. But if race is racism and racism is mistreating people on the basis of color, and mistreating people on the basis of color is white supremacy, how am I a member of a race? And I've asked white people that question.
And say that one more time. I'm sorry, say that one more time. If you're a member of a race, okay?
If race is racism.
Okay.
And racism is white supremacy. And white supremacy is mistreating people on the basis of color.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that I am a member of a race?
Mm.
See, now, I've asked this question to white people, many white people. Eventually, the conversation comes down to them saying, well, you're a member of a race because I said you are.
Sorry.
There's nowhere else for the conversation to go. Yeah, because they keep saying, when I lived in Virginia, I had license plates on my vehicle that said non-race. this was an experiment that I was running, non-race. I mean, you should see white people while I'm sitting at the stoplight walking in the front of my car, looking at my license plate, looking at me. You know what I mean? So I'm having a conversation with a guy once, and this is just one example. When he asked me, he said, what does that mean? I said, oh, it means I'm not a member of a race. He said, yes, you are. I said, why? He just sat there and looked at me. Why am I? You know, I'm not a member of a group of people who have obtained their power and their status in society by mistreating all other people on the basis of color. That's what a race does. That's all a race does. You know, so I'm sitting there talking to him, and I'm like, well, mister, you just are. And, you know, it's a calm day, about 70 degrees. We're sitting outside at the park, and we are just having a calm conversation. Nobody's getting, you know, upset or frustrated about it. And every time that he said, you are, I said, okay, well, why am I? See, he doesn't want to give me the language to be able to describe why I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
See, but I'm giving it to him and asking him to confirm it. So eventually he just got tired and said, you are because I said you are.
Mm. Wow.
See, but historically, black people have been taught that we are a race of people. But we were taught by whom?
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some black people in our history who have grabbed a hold of the idea just like we grabbed a hold of the idea and just started running with it without examining it, what it really means. We're not members of a race. We are victims of race.
Wow.
Because race and racism are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I never thought about that. But it does make sense. Because what other reason does it exist? Right?
I'm sorry?
I said, you're right. What other reason does race exist?
Yeah. And has the word been used in a manner that has helped anybody?
Hmm.
I mean, think about that.
Mm-hmm.
About all the things that you have to do and all the things that you have to say
mm-hmm.
as a result of the word being in existence at all. Just think about that. Just go off and think about that. Get some quiet time is what I call it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Some quiet time and just think about it. I mean, no headphones on my ears pounding in Jay-Z. You know what I mean? I mean, it's
right.
Just, yeah, quiet time and sit and think
mm-hmm.
about what it means to be a member of a race and how it is that helps you to do anything constructive at all. I mean, why chop people up like that? And what's the criteria? I mean, you got non-white people that have lighter skin than some white people. What is the criteria?
Mm-hmm.
And who decides what that criteria is?
Hmm.
If white people are deciding what the criteria is, there's your answer. We are confused about how things work. And once you get in it and start experimenting with it and start asking questions and start talking to people, you'll begin to see the patterns of behavior that people have. I mean, just reading in a book, I talked to Mr. Fuller about the code book. I told him, man, first time I read that book, I was just turning the pages. I'm already doing that. I'm already doing that. I'm already, you know. What good is this book, man? I'm already doing this stuff. You know. And then I began to think about how it's designed and how it's put together. And what really clicked for me was the definitions of the words in the back. When I began to examine those, then I began to understand how different the thinking of a person who is interested in producing a system of justice has to be, how different their thinking has to be about how things work. So I took those words and their definitions, and I began to use them, and I began to see things differently. I mean, not all of them. Me and Ms. Fuller had conversation after conversation after conversation about some of those definitions, and he's changing some in the book that's coming out next month.
Next month? Okay.
Yeah, he's got a word guide.
Okay.
That's supposed to be released next month. And I understand that word guide is like almost 430 pages.
Wow.
I mean, it's a huge book.
Hmm.
But I mean, so you read some of the definitions, right? And the definition will be like the definition for law is anything that has an effect. Now, what does that mean? So you have to work with the definitions, get him to add some dimension to what it is that he's talking about. I mean, don't accept anything in that face value if you don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Don't accept anything in the Bible at face value if you don't understand it. I mean, or any other book for that matter, the book that I wrote. I mean, if you have any questions about that, send me an email, you know, a post on the forum. I mean, it's because it's a lot to try to take in. Any book, I hope I've answered that question for you.
Yes, you did. You had something to think about. And I hope if you when you have time in the future, if I'm looking forward to some constructive feedback from you about our book. You know,
oh, yes.
So, yeah, thank you very much for that. You just gave me something else to study. So I got to think about what you said, you know, because it's a new way of it's just I never thought of it that way. So I'll go on and let the other callers get in, and I'll just keep listening.
Okay, thank you for sending me a copy of your book as well. I really appreciate that.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
TrojanHorse1.com, the website where you can check out the book, Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation, TrojanHorse1.com. Pam should be back this Tuesday, I believe. That's the first. Yep, this Tuesday she should be back chatting it up, racism, white supremacy, again. See, the person who called in, 2658, if you have a question for Mr. Williams, your line is open. And again, if you would like to call in, there are about 8 minutes left in the live feed. The number is 347-215-6071. If you think you might need me to Skype you, do not wait until the last minute. You should do that now if you are thinking you might need that. 2658, your line is open. If you have a question for Mr. Williams, go right ahead.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I actually had two questions, but I would ask one at one because I think it's not going to be in time for the second one. My question is and it's based on the recently over the past week and a half, 2 weeks, there have been a great amount of attention on several shooting incidents involving enforcement officials. I happen to be in the South Florida area and live in close proximity to the incident that took place in the Miami, Florida area. Within the shootings, what I would consider to be a very racially rich environment as far as words that I've heard on the comments of it by the director of the police department and calling the shooter evil. The officers were ambushed. One of the enforcement officials was an anti-sexual. These things came up. I didn't bring them up. They came up in the attention, the amount of attention that was given to the subject matter. And also there was at the funeral of those two enforcement officials, there was a similar incident that took place north of Miami, Florida, in St. Petersburg. Were also some of the similar comments that were made that the non-white assailant was ambushed the enforcement officials. It appears to me that in both incidents, the enforcement officials were white. It appears that they were white. The two in St. Petersburg. And at least one of the enforcement officials appeared to be white in the South Florida area. I just wanted to know from the guests or anybody, what did they know about the incidents, and if so, what's their take on it?
If I understand the question. Under the system of racism, white supremacy, those things are going to happen. I've read a little bit about the recent incidents that you you're referring to, and that's how the system works. I mean, the best thing to do is to stay away from that kind of activity. Speak out about it and don't participate in it. Under the refinement of racism, white supremacy, large numbers of non-white people are going to be killed. And they are going to be killed by other non-white people. I mean, those things are just going to happen. Should they happen? No, of course not. Shouldn't be happening. Racism, white supremacy should not be happening. But those things are going to happen. And it's not just the so-called police. I mean, there are people all over the place killing each other, left and right. Under the refinement of the system, the white people who practice racism, white supremacy, they don't have to do all the killing directly themselves. And you might find, a white person here, a white person there, that'll become so stressed with their involvement in the things that are going on where they may commit an act like that. But they are just less refined in their practice of mistreating people on the basis of color than the more refined white people who kill non-white people and have them kill each other by the truckload, thousands, hundreds of thousands at a time. And so all of these things are going on all around the planet all the time. Now, I mean, to protect yourself, the best thing to do is just not to be in that area where those things are going on. But when you read about them, when you see them happening, your understanding of why they're happening should aid you in some manner or form in terms of motivating you to stay away from it. I'm not one of the non-white people who will say, don't buy a gun. I got three myself. Mm-hmm. And I also have a concealed handgun license to carry my pistol that's on me all the time. And so whatever each individual non-white person thinks is necessary for them to do in order to keep from being harmed, and in order to get the help that they need when they need it, that non-white person will have to decide that for themselves. But know one thing, that the things that you described are going to continue to happen until we are able to replace the system of racism, white supremacy, with a system of justice. I hope I've answered your question.
Yes, sir. Do I have time to ask the second question?
I didn't hear Gus chime in, so sure.
Okay. In terms of the system of racism, white supremacy, and white supremacy being having the most power amongst people, through my conversing with other people, I have heard challenges to that idea, such as the people who are called Chinese the non-white people who are called Chinese. I've also heard the non-white people who are called Indians, not the ones who are called Native Indians, but in the place called India. What's another place? I can't think of it right now. Well, maybe even Japan. The non-white people call it Japanese. I've heard, in contrast to the idea that the system of the people who identify themselves as white, who are also are white supremacists, as being the most powerful element amongst people in the known universe. I've heard that it doesn't affect the system of racism, doesn't affect people who call themselves Chinese. And I've mentioned a few other examples I've heard. What is your take on that idea of stating that Chinese people are not affected by the system of racism and white supremacy?
Well, I take the position that the system of racism and white supremacy is a global system. Everywhere that there is a person, that person is a part of the system of racism and white supremacy. Either they are practicing it, or they are allowing it to be practiced, or they are a victim of it. That's the position that I take. Now, if I am talking to another non-white person who doesn't take the same position, then I'm just talking to another non-white person that doesn't take the same position.
Right.
I mean, if you attempt to evangelize counter-racism code, then what's going to happen is you're going to end up being in conflict with other non-white people. I mean,
okay,
that's just what's going to happen. That's the way that things are set up. I mean, and that's the reason I spoke earlier about helping that person to solve a problem. Helping that person to solve a problem, and you can talk about other constructive things while you're doing that. You know, the person you might bring up while you're helping somebody to paint their house. You might bring up a situation that you're having on the job where you've been promoted over some white people. I mean, that happens. It happens all the time. I was in that situation several times. And the person that you're helping paint their house is a non-white person who has white people reporting to them on the job. So you might bring up a conversation about, well, how is it that you've been able to be successful handling the people who report to you that are white people? And the person may be, you know, totally against even discussing that. Say, okay, not a problem. I'm just looking for some constructive information because I'm in the same position. But we can talk about baseball if you want to talk about baseball. I mean, that's how the conversation should go.
Right.
I mean, if you see somebody walking outside, and the sun is shining, and they got a raincoat on and a rain hat and galoshes, and you ask them why it is that they have that raincoat on, and they say, because it goes with my shoes. You know, you start explaining to that person, hey, look, it's not raining. Why do you have that on? And the person becomes more and more frustrated by what it is that you are telling them. I mean, you are producing conflict between you and that person.
Correct.
You know, so the best thing to do is to make sure that you are helping somebody else to solve a problem, another non-white person to solve a problem, or they are helping you to solve a problem. And in the process of solving that problem, whatever it is, make sure that no person is mistreated and that the person who needs help the most get the most help. and you both will be headed down the path of producing justice.
The person
dialed
in. Thank you for your question, sir. The person who dialed in from a blocked number, if you dialed in, this is a different person from a blocked number. If you dialed in and haven't asked the question yet, your line is open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings. Justice, what I want to ask is, what do you say to people that say this concept of justice is a fantasy? They say that you know, I'm not asking this question to get into conflict with you. I understand VGQ, but what I'm saying is that logically speaking, this concept that you have of justice is illogical. Species that need the most help in nature seem to help themselves. They don't ask other species to, help them at all. They adapt to their environment and they survive. Do you see it? I mean, is there anything that you can point to that where you see justice happening in nature or anywhere in the universe?
If I understand the question, the answer to the question is no. Justice and injustice cannot exist in the same universe at the same time. There's no way to make those two things habitable in the same universe at the same time. You either have one or the other.
Well, what if the injustice is the justice?
I'm sorry?
What if injustice is justice, then?
Let's listen to that question. What if injustice is justice? It depends on how you define the words. I define justice as guaranteeing that no person is mistreated, number one, and guaranteeing that the person who needs help the most get the most help. There is no person that I'm aware of, including me, in this universe that can guarantee that no person will be mistreated. Now, based on that definition of justice, then justice does not exist. Now, a person can define justice however it is that they want to define justice, and they may define it in such a way that when they look at injustice, it looks like justice. And when they look at justice, it looks like injustice. So it really boils down to how you define the term. And you should define the term so that you understand what you're looking at. I mean, there's no, the way I describe it in the book, there's no way to, it's like being able to urinate in a small part of a swimming pool. No way to have justice in one part of the world and not the other part. I mean, that contaminates the entire pool. That's just the way it works. It worked that way before I came to this planet. It's going to work that way after I'm gone. There are people right now who are talking about going to Mars. You think they're going to take justice with them? That's just simply the way the concept works. So depending on how you define the word justice and the word injustice, I mean, you may be able to say that depending on the way that they're defined, that there's no difference between the two. But according to the definition of justice that I use, I understand that that doesn't exist anywhere in the known universe. And that is what I am trying to bring into being. That's the position I take. There are some people who say that it can never be done. You know, there were some people not even 100 years ago that were saying having an airplane that would fly 400 miles an hour could never be done. You know, there are many things that people have said for hundreds of years, maybe even thousands of years, that could never be done, that have been done. So it's up to the individual to decide for themselves whether or not they want to take on the of bringing that elusive thing that we call justice based on their definition as an individual into being. Now, some people say it's already here. Then, okay, it's already here for that person. I say that it's not. And based on my definition, the one that I use, it's not. Did I answer your question, sir?
Yes, sir. I would just say that even though I do believe that justice is inevitable, it sounds illogical. I mean, it sounds illogical. I can see where somebody that would make an argument against your definition of justice would say that it doesn't compute logically.
Oh, of course. I mean, many people will say that. I was speaking with Justice earlier, talking about people who are born in prison, who don't have any idea what a prison is. You know, you have prisoners born in prison. The concept. This is a concept. You know, prisoners born in prison. I have no idea what a prison is. They think the prison is the whole world. And somebody is in there talking about apple trees. What are you talking about? I mean, they have no idea of a concept of anything that could ever exist outside of a prison. Me sitting up talking to a victim of racism, white supremacy about no person being mistreated. No person being mistreated. That person is asking me, what are you talking about? That doesn't exist. I know it doesn't exist. I'm trying to bring it into being. Oh, that'll never happen. Now, see, if you yourself have concluded that it'll never happen, but you're trying to bring it into being, so you end up fooling yourself. So see, there's no way to evangelize this. There's no way to become a missionary for counter-racism. You're going to end up causing conflict between you and other non-white people. But sitting down and discussing it as a concept, and presumably what will a person have to say and do in order to bring that concept into a reality? Well, there's nothing incorrect about that. I had a non-white person to tell me that, hey, that's heaven. that what you're talking about is heaven. You can't have heaven on earth. You got to die first. And that was their position. Okay, fine. No problem there. And we start talking about something else. Well, there's no way a non-white person can make another non-white person believe that counter-racism code is going to work. That person has to be involved in doing it, involved in using it, involved in saying it, involved in thinking it.